A Weekend with Jason Dacey replay from Money FM 89.3.
Career resilience, that's something that keeps us going in our job and makes us successful. With Adrian Chu, the founder and CEO at Career Agility International, and his partner, the executive director at Career Agility International, Zhiyan Chi. Good to see you guys. And Adrian, in recent times, we've been talking about career resilience. You've been active on LinkedIn about it. We had a segment about it. So for the next few weeks, I'm going to be talking about chapters in my life where I've had to show resilience and it's got me through in the end. So I'd love to get your feedback, the two of you. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's lovely because you have had a very colourful career story as well. 4 decades, spanning almost all forms of media, isn't it?
It is, and trying to stay relevant, Yen. You know, the media's changed so much. Since I began in the late 70s, and here we are in 2019, it's a different world, a different media landscape.
It's entirely different, and the speed of change is ridiculous, isn't it?
It's absolutely ridiculous. So this is before I was in Singapore. We're going to talk about how I broke into the BBC, and within 6 months of arriving in London in 1994, I'm on the BBC as a presenter without any context there at all, right? And this is a story that will show a positive attitude, keeping sight of my dream despite setbacks, doing a good job in lesser roles, and taking an unexpected route to what I really wanted. So it's the summer of 1994. I'd been in Australia. I'd lived in the UK before, and I returned to London. And it was a pretty bad time in media, and we've seen lots of ups and downs over the years. And at this point, I went back to some of the old people I'd worked for and asked them if they had any work. And one of them was Reuters. You've probably heard of Reuters, yes. News agency. And they said, no, there's nothing going on. And I made the point, even though there was nothing going on, I went to see them in person, okay, and just made the contact again. I worked for them previously. I made the contact. And it was, you know, well, you know, you've been in the UK before, I'm sure, and it's summer, it's lovely weather. And I wanted to do something positive rather than just wait at home for opportunities. I didn't have anything. I got a temp job. I signed up with a temp agency and did any job they gave me. And the job I ended up doing was working at Liberty Department Store in the furniture department. And you think this is the furthest away that you could possibly be from a job in broadcasting. But I felt good about it because I was out there. It was, you know, Regent Street near Oxford Street in the city of or in the shopping district of London. I'm working. I'm being positive rather than moping at home. And, you know, I'd gone to Reuters, and sure enough, they got back to me and they said, look, there's nothing going on at Reuters, but somebody just dropped into the office and said they need producers for the BBC Sports Service, BBC World, which is a TV network, the TV arm of BBC World Service Radio. And funny enough, Adrian, if I hadn't made the personal contact by going to Reuters, they wouldn't have called me. If I just called them up on the phone and said, oh, they've got nothing going on, they don't really remember. People don't remember these kind of connections when it's on the phone. When it's in person, you go and meet them, it makes a bigger impact, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's right. And that's why we always encourage our clients to network aggressively, actively, and don't just sit there and wait for things to happen. It's not going to happen. But, and you know, your story is interesting because it's one of serendipity as well.
Exactly, exactly. But I had the foresight to actually go there and the energy.
And you made things happen, right?
Yeah. So, look, but yeah, and the thing that they said was it's just one day work. Yeah. It's just one day work at the BBC. They need a producer just for one day. So I went along to the BBC and took me, the BBC TV Centre. It's a famous building. It's now actually moved. But at that time, I went there and I worked as a producer for the sports news for BBC. And then the guy there said, actually, we need someone tomorrow as well. So he said, okay, and then we want someone a bit longer. So I'm working as a producer at the BBC in sports news. But my real goal and the goal that I always had was to be a presenter. And I'd done presenting before, but it had never really worked out. You know, I'd done some, and you know what it's like, Yen, when you're trying so hard, you're trying too hard. When I was doing presenting, I was always trying too hard. And I guess you see people in professions that are trying too hard sometimes rather than just relaxing and being themselves.
If they try too hard, sometimes they lose the opportunity. But back to your original story, you know what they say about luck, that it's mostly manufactured.
Mm.
And what you've done, having visited Reuters' office and meeting those people, created that luck for yourself, which is wonderful. And then following that, doing the that one day job at the BBC gave you access to the right people. who might really just enjoy your work ethic, and that's very positive and powerful.
Yes, it was. So I'm in the building. I'm in the building working as a producer for BBC World Service Sports News. Okay, on TV. And then they do an audition for presenters because they need presenters. At that time, it was the general news presenter that does the presenting of the sports news. But they wanted, again, specialized sports presenters. But I messed up the audition. I didn't do well. I was trying too hard. I was just trying too hard. It wasn't terrible, but it wasn't great. It wasn't my best work. And what happened was they only could pick two, and I just continued to produce. Of course, I'm disappointed that I haven't been picked. And Adrian, you know what it's like when you're having now to produce the people that beat you in the audition.
Oh, no.
You know, it's not a good feeling. But and this goes back to my original point. Even though I'm doing a lesser job, I'm doing my very best. I'm being professional and not scowling at them. And sure enough, I got a couple of opportunities in filling in on another show, and that gave me a bit of a confidence, a few skills. And then over Christmas of 1994, the regular presenters went on holidays. They needed someone desperately. There was no one else. They had to go to me, even though I hadn't done so well in the audition. So, Jason, you're in.
Wow.
Can you imagine?
Good for you.
Can you imagine? It's Christmas 1994. My heart's beating like a drum. I mean, you know, really hard, very fast beating pace. And I go in there and I was so nervous, but I did a decent job. And I always remember there was a guy called Damien McGee. He was an Irishman. He goes, "Did you mess up, Jason?" That's what I came up. So I said, "No, Damien, I actually did it. I did okay." So I had to fill in for a few days over Christmas. And by the way, when you're working for BBC over Christmas, you get paid a lot.
Wow.
You know, because it's you know, time.
It's Christmas,
time.
Right?
Yeah. And I remember I was working for an outside company, not the BBC itself. Anyway, so I'm doing it for about 2 weeks. And I'm getting better and better, and I'm trying to relax, even though it's something I really wanted. At the end of that stint, the sports editor was a guy called David Brenner, and he actually was doing presenting as well at times. And then he got a call from the big boss from BBC. And I could tell they were talking about me. You know how at that time there weren't cell phones. I mean, there weren't many cell phones. It was a landline.
Yeah.
Picks up and he goes, yes, okay. And all you're hearing is one side of the conversation. He's going, yes, okay, yeah, about Jason, yes, yep, understood, yep. So he puts down the phone and I'm like, oh my God, the big boss has called in to complain how bad I am. And I'm going to get kicked out of the BBC. I'm not going to be able to continue my even producing. And he was a bit white. I was like, well, what's gone wrong? So, Jason, that was Bob Wheaton, the executive editor of BBC. Look, he likes what he sees. You're going to be the senior sports presenter from the relaunch of BBC World. And
wow.
I'm like, wow, can you believe that? And I finally, this was a major turning point. This is the beginning of 1995, having filled in the Christmas of 1994. Can you believe how I felt? And since then, that was 25 years ago, just about, my career changed.
Yeah.
But I was so close to missing out. And I think, Ian, what I learned was, again, positive attitude, went into London, worked in the furniture department. So it had been 6 months from working at Liberty, the furniture department, lifting furniture, nothing to do with broadcasting, to being the senior sports presenter on BBC World as it relaunches with Richard Quest and all these other famous presenters that you've seen. I kept sight of my dream despite setbacks. I did a good job in lesser roles despite my disappointment. And I took an unexpected path to achieving my goal rather than going right to HR within the BBC, because that's not how you get in that job. So what would you say, Ian, about that?
That's an amazing trajectory. And what that speaks about you is your abilities and that you already had the foundation to perform and do well. Can you imagine if you had a coach?
At that time,
may not have had a bad audition, because what you needed was just someone to partner you and to talk through your stress, and it could have been a shorter curve. But you did well nonetheless.
Yeah, what would you say, Adrian?
Well, I think it also speaks to being prepared. But I think it's the other thing as well, you have to understand that sometimes in your career, you're not in charge. It's just a matter of fate and timing.
Mm.
So your time wasn't until Christmas 94. So, but you know what? You hung in there. You didn't give up. You didn't quit.
Yes.
And you had a foot in the door. And that was a brilliant strategy because even if you didn't get a role, you could see from behind the camera what they were doing right, what they were doing wrong. So it was a brilliant career move. And I think one of the things is if you had not been resilient during that time, you would not have gotten opportunity. So sometimes you just have to be patient, have to be humble. And I think these are great lessons even for our kids, right?
Yeah, indeed. And you're 100% right. Because when I was producing, I remember the people who had actually become the presenters before I actually got the opportunity, they didn't treat me that well and they weren't that good. I'm like, oh dear, I could do better than this. But I kept my dignity and respect. But you can imagine it would have been quite tough for me to do that.
Yes.
You know? So I'd say anyone out there listening to this, when you are doing a lesser job, do it well because the boss
will notice.
And we all know, I mean, I've been a boss and Adrian's been a boss and you've been a boss, yeah, and we know people, we see people who are doing well and we go, wow, I like something in them. You may not That's even right. say that to them, but you notice, don't you?
Yes, always. When candidates that get new jobs, the onboarding process, that's when they're under the microscope the most.
Yes.
People will be noticing, yes. even if you think they're not.
Yes. And I really do wish I had more of a mentor, Adrian, you know, in those years, because I didn't have anyone to talk to. And it's not good to talk to colleagues in that time because it's a dog-eat-dog world in media. Everyone wants to be on TV, right?
That's right.
Everyone's going after the brass ring, right? They don't care. So, and it's only and they're only limited spots anyway, right? So no one's going to
very limited.
So no one's going to help you or get ahead of themselves. So
yeah, and I was thrown into a whole new world when you become a presenter. And I'd been a presenter before, filling in and stuff. But when you become a permanent, full-time presenter, you're on the BBC, you're seeing all around the world. Everyone treats you differently. You're the same person.
That's right.
But everybody treats you differently and the possibilities become a lot broader. There are a lot more things that you can do.
Yes, visibility helps. In fact, one of the things that we do at Career Agility is not just the crossroaders. We are talking also about acceleration strategies. So if you had gotten a mentor or someone you trust, not necessarily within the organization, they could have given you some hints and some ideas on how you could have managed better.
Yes. You know, it's true because we want something so much, Adrian, and sometimes by trying too hard, we push it away.
Yeah, I know. And life's like that. My same goes for ex-girlfriends as well. So
I was just thinking about that.
It's Saturday morning, so we can talk about that. It's off.
Yeah, but is entirely inappropriate.
No, but it's true because sometimes if you try too hard, it backfires, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I think some people don't try hard enough. But I was one of these people, Yen, that always just tried too hard and, you know, I was over, you know, I mean, being a journalist, you're always chasing people to talk and I think that was just part of my DNA, just, you know, forcing the issue. Sometimes you need to take a step back to a kind of, you know, analyze something and let it go for a while. And if it's meant to come, and we just played Sting, you know, if you love someone, set them free. And if it's going to come back, it'll come back, right?
I think if it was your opportunity, it would have been yours. But it's very good to have that attitude, that persistence, that doggedness. I think it was just a matter for you to harness it appropriately. So if you'd built some level of empathy, perhaps, or some, I guess, what I like to call antenna, the antenna to get a sense for the persons you're talking to, you might have gotten better results. But I think kudos to you for having the foundation for that doggedness and that persistence. I think that's really, really positive.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, it really was a you know, life-changing story and experience, and it's good to get your insights. I wish you guys were around 25 years ago. I think it would have been a bit smoother.
Actually, interestingly, a lot of our clients who have come through our program and those whom we've helped a lot, one of the most common comments is, I wish I knew you guys 2 years ago even, or 3 years ago,
yes.
because this would have benefited us a lot. And that's why, as Yen was saying, a lot of, although this program was designed for the career crossroaders in their late 30s and mid-40s, we are seeing a lot of people, even as early as in the late 20s, coming on board and they're saying, hey, look, it's better that we learn this now than later because then I have more years to practice it. So that's why we're getting a lot of sign-ups for our Career Clarity workshops from even the younger ones.
Good to know. Yeah, and I was 32 at that time, so it's right in the wheelhouse there of people doing things. So I'd really like to thank Adrian Chu and CN Chi from Career Agility International. Guys, thank you so much for going back in time with me and listening to my story.
You're very welcome. We're glad to hear your story.
I always love the war stories, Jason.
All right. Thank you very much, guys.